bringing Love in our Talk energy.
Radio.
To bring in the love in us.
And hey, let us ransom people for God.
Hey.
From every tribe and language, people, every nation.
Hey.
We're warriors of calling, there's a resurrection coming.
It is your time to rise and shine.
Oh, wake up, you sleeping giant.
The wounds of injustice are being healed by the peace.
Hey. Oh, yeah.
Cohen Shalameen Halahawi. Is that right? Did I say Halahawi right? I can't hear you. Okay. Let's see. Check my mic. Mute. No, mic's open. Is your mic open? Okay, speak to me. Can't hear you. Let me see. Yeah. Are you on your computer or your phone? Computer? I don't know why. I'm checking my my mic's here. Let's see what's going on here. Don't know why we can't hear you. Move from stream, edit mic settings. Mute. You're mute now, but speak, say something. Can you? Yeah, I still can't hear you. Okay, I'm going to unmute you again. Okay, I don't know what's going on. Can you can hear me okay though? Okay, can you go out and come back in, or maybe, you know what, let me send you another link and see if that helps. I'm going to send you another link and see if that helps. Because welcome, everybody. I've got Rabbi Cohen in the studio, but we're just having trouble hearing him. So I'm going to send him a different link and see if that makes any difference, because I'm not sure why we can't hear him. I'm going to go back in here and go to a different email. Sometimes my email, if I use a certain email, I use my Gmail to send Rabbi Cohen the link, and that may not work as well. Let's see. So I'm trying. Hold on, folks. We're trying to get him in here. New mail. Okay, send mail. Okay, always something to challenge us first thing. Okay, maybe I'll play some music. Let me play some music while we try and work out the kinks here. I'll play Becky Shea one more time and we'll...
Some people for God, from every tribe and language, people, every nation, where warriors are falling, there's a resurrection coming.
I feel it.
this. Let me close out the music. I don't know what that was. It probably my Gmail account wasn't connecting as well. So welcome, dear Rabbi Cohen, Shalomim Halawai Halot. So you're going to have to break that Hebrew down for us, for our listeners who don't understand Hebrew. It occurred to me that part of the new education for moving from public schools is to teach Hebrew, the better language. So I'm really glad to have someone in here who knows the language and who can speak on the value of Hebrew, because I've studied it for many years and realized the importance of this language as we move to a different education. There you are, bigger now. Okay, so welcome, Dr. Rabbi Cohen Shalomim. How are you this evening?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me.
Okay. So you're in Atlanta, right?
That is correct.
And let me get rid of this other link.
Yeah, because I can hear you.
I need to get rid of this other, can you leave studio. I'm trying to get rid of this. Okay, let me mute that mic. Okay, I muted the other mic. Okay, there we go. All right, you still there?
I'm here.
Okay, so welcome. You're in Atlanta, one of my favorite cities. My nephew just left here on his way back to Atlanta. He lives in near Fayetteville. You know where Fayetteville is?
Yes, I'm familiar.
And my sister lives in College Park. She's been there for about 30 years. So every time I come into the Atlanta airport, she's like 10 minutes from the airport, and we go to College Park, and that's where I have been visiting for many, many, many years, for 30 years, actually. I've been in Florida that long, and she's been in Georgia that long. So Dr. Rabbi Cohen, we're here to talk tonight about moving beyond public education, which is a mess right now, if you ask me. And I wanted to start off talking about our education as children. I'm 68 years. I'll be 68 next month. So I had lots of memories about Chicago. I grew up in Chicago, and I had a pretty good education. I lived in Hyde Park, which is the University of Chicago pretty much runs Hyde Park right now, but they had lots of staff members and students living in that area. So I grew up in a kind of a college community with a very diverse population. I mean, you're talking everything from Chinese to blacks and whites and foreigners all over the place in my schools that I grew up in. So I had a very diverse education, and my father was an educator, and I had lots of cousins who were educators. So we were always encouraged to read books. I would say more than anything, my education included reading a lot of books. So I read lots of books, and then when I was 11, 12 years old, I went to Paris, France with my French class. And so today I really think one of the best ways to educate children is to allow them to travel, whether it's in the United States or in a foreign country. We cannot give our children a good education if we keep them in the same neighborhood all their life and don't get them outside of the neighborhood. So that's my experience has been one of not only diverse community, but traveling and learning from my relatives what their history was about. So can you tell us a little bit about your education as a child, where you grew up, and how that education influenced you over the years?
Sure. Well, after my family from Mount Carmel immigrated here, and I was born here, I grew up between Jacksonville, Florida, and Savannah, Georgia. I received both public and private education. I actually graduated from Reebok Senior High in Jacksonville, Florida. So my experience with public education growing up, it was a positive experience. Because me being a person from the outside, looking in and looking at the behaviors of a lot of the children, and you're looking at the parents of the children, it's not the teachers. It's not the educational curriculum, because everybody receives the same education curriculum across the United States in public school. That's not the problem. The problem is the children and how they're raised at home and how they're being parented, especially being parented in single-parent homes, again, by single mothers, especially. It's ironic that if you had a single father that raised children, it'd come out completely different than most children who are raised by single mothers. Single fathers seem to produce better and stronger and more foundational children, and that's because men are foundational in the first place. So, but for the most part, I went to school with Black Americans. I'm not Black American. I'm from the Middle East. So my culture, my values, and everything, how I was raised, was completely different. And so a lot of things was not incompatible. And, you know, I watched children drop out of school in ninth grade, and who were basically what you would define as thugs today when you catch up with them and everything. How they act in school is basically how they end up being adults. My childhood education with the public schools, especially in Jacksonville, was negative. I would say in Savannah, the few years I went to Savannah was a little bit more positive, because I went to a school that was around a different type of environment and community of people where children were more likely raised in two-parent homes, and they were fluent, if you say. So they had a little bit more formality, a little bit more attention and education from home. And, of course, they also had culture, as opposed to the ones in Florida, without the culture, making up their cultures to go. And some things that have been normalized that are destructive in nature is just, and with the drug epidemic, because especially in the 80s, you had the drug epidemic, and you had those parents who was producing drug babies, and those drug babies end up going to schools. And those drug babies are not the parents of kids you see now shooting and fighting and everything all over Atlanta and all over the United States and all schools and everything with the gangs and stuff like that. So I vowed that my children would never go to public school. And I have 8 children, and I never put them in public school. They went through private school. And being that I'm, from a Mizrahi and Ethiopian Jewish background, the Jewish community, we have our own schools. So that's the standard and everything. And because, first of all, we already have our culture, we already have our identity, which is taught at home. And so everybody who goes to school, we're going to learn. We're going to learn how to build, how to create, how to do technology, how to get into science. We're learning as children how to prepare ourselves for adulthood, how to prepare ourselves to be men and women, who are going to be husbands and wives and parents. That's what we're taught in Jewish community, whether it's Ethiopian, Ashkenazi, or Sephardi, or Mizrahi or Ethiopian. We're taught, we have our own separate school, we have our own separate educational standards and everything. And that's why, in most cases, just like other people in private school, we fare well better than most children who go to public schools. But of course, public schools, it depends on your geographical location, because you have some public schools in affluent communities, middle and upper class communities, that you can send your kids to and they would fare better than if they went to a public school in the inner city, more so to say and everything. Not to say that affluent kids, you got bad affluent kids, but it's not as prevalent with the bullying and the corruption and the bad, you know, the bad behavior, it's not as prevalent as you see in the cities where it's just a constant environment of fear and terror and gangs and bullying and people, you know, and peer pressure on fashion design and all this stuff and everything that's irrelevant to education in the inner city pushes it on each other to the point where people are bullied or intimidated in becoming and adopting behaviors and cultural habits that they normally wouldn't go along with, even if they were raised differently. So it's like a toxic inner city. Most inner city public schools are just toxic. And in this day and age, I consider it dangerous. I would like in Atlanta, and people get offended, I would never send my children to public school anywhere in Atlanta. You got Lithonia, for example. Lithonia has a history where just literally the majority of their children all have problems and everything. And you have a huge failure rate of Black American children in public schools, especially in the Atlanta, in Georgia area. In fact, Georgia was the hub of that national scandal that they had where because Black American children are failing so much that they had to inflate and lie and increase their grades because children third year, you know, children in New York, elementary school, you have whole entire Black elementary schools of Black children just completely fail and everything. So, and this is a widespread problem all across the United States. And, you know, they, all they want, you know, they, because they don't have the answers, they pivot to racism and, you know, need more funding for education. No, you don't need more funding for education. In fact, you don't need funding for education because education can be taught at home and everything. Poverty has nothing to do with education. Funding money has nothing to do with education. Education is something that can be fundamentally accessed no matter what your circumstances. So I don't buy what NAACP and all of these other Black American leaders keep pivoting to about needing more funding, racism, and white privilege and all of that stuff. That's just absolutely not true because Black children who go to private schools fare much better than children in public schools, Black children in public schools. You know, so ultimately, like, for example, you don't ever hear any problems about Asian children with behavior problems in school. In fact, you wonder what schools they go to. They have their own schools. They have their own educational system. They have their own culture. The Hispanics, even though they have their problems secondary to Black American problems, they still have a united cultural background that makes them fare well. That's, you know, I used to live in before I came back here in Atlanta in 2020, I went to Port Siena and lived there for 5 years. And I live in the upper middle class area where everybody was Hispanic. So you had the Caribbean and Hispanics, and everybody was upper middle class. And everybody had their families intact, and the community was completely different than what you would experience like living in Atlanta. There's some places in Atlanta, like where I live now, in the city of South Fulton, which are affluent upper middle class. And of course, the children fare better and everything. Even if some go to public school, but at the same time, I'm looking at some upper middle class families, especially the ones from Africa and the Middle East that live in our communities that we have a relationship with. We see, they see our children go to a completely different educational system, and they're sending their children to public school. And their children, even though they're Muslim and stuff, you can see them picking up bad habits and everything. You see young girls who are Muslim and they wrap their hair and all that stuff there, but they're listening to ratchet music and everything. Some music that the grades went. So it's still, even with affluent people in Black communities that are affluent, there's still elements. There's still elements where there's a lot of bad habits that are getting picked up in public school. And unfortunately, I say it, but here in Atlanta, it's starting to filter over in some of the majority Black American private schools. It's starting to filter over into that because I'm understanding they're actually closing down one Black American private school because it's just a big mess and the kids are failing. And so, once again, public school, private school. Before I say what I was going to say, dealing with the private school and everything, we do have Black, and sad, we have Black American children in second, third grade, the parents were withdrawing them because the parents were saying that the curriculum was too hard for even the parents to sustain. And so they were dropping their kids out of private school and putting them back in public school because the kids couldn't even keep up with the education in the private school. So public school, private school, the issue is the home. That's the root problem. It's not the private schools. It's not the public schools. It's the parents, and it's the family unit, and it's the culture and the environment these kids are being raised at home and what they're bringing into the schools. If you got a single parent home, and the mom is illiterate, and she doesn't have an education background, how is she going to help the child with homework? That's why they're saying second grade education is too hard for the parent to understand. That's the problem. So if the parent does not have the proper education, no matter where she puts, he or they put their children, public or private, child is not going to fare well if he doesn't have a grounded foundation at home.
So let me back up a little bit. You said your parents were born in Mount Carmel?
My great-grandparents.
Your great-grandparents?
Yes, they're indigenous to Mount Carmel.
So
Before Israel was reestablished, you were there before 1948.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, so now where are you? And your parents were born there too?
Well, my great-grandparents immigrated here, and then, of course, everybody's born here. And we have family here in New York, California, and we have family also still in Israel. And we have family in Oman, as well as Palestine, and I'm Sudan.
Okay, so your parents were born in the U.S.
Correct.
So how did your grandparents' culture from Mount Carmel influence your household? Because was that a strong influence, or did your parents teach you something totally different, or did they become more Americanized? How did your great-grandparents' culture help influence you?
My family ended up being split into two different type of families after my maternal. Both of my family are Jewish. My father's side is Mizrahi and Ethiopian, and my mother's side is Ashkenazi and Sephardi. So after they moved over here, the older generation practiced Judaism, and that's how I inherited. Like my great uncle and everything is the one who taught me, and my uncle taught me Judaism and everything. My maternal grandmother and my paternal grandmother, they were like in between Judaism and, kind of Americanized. And my maternal grandmother's mother, which is my great grandmother, married a Christian guy. And so they had children, and those children are Christian. And so we have one whole side that's Christian and the other side that's Jewish. And they don't interact with each other.
Really?
No. Except for funerals, the Jewish people show up at funerals. That's about it, because the Christian side is a mess. That's all I can say. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I left Florida, because of that toxic and everything. They were not representing the Jewish values I was raised in, because that's all the great grandparents. I was raised by my great grandparents, and then I was raised by my grandmother, because my father was away. Most people already know, so I might want to say that my father was away because he used to work for the CIA. He passed away now because he was in the Pentagon when he got hit with a missile, and he ended up getting lung cancer that was associated with the toxic materials and stuff. So he passed away in 2017. So, but he was away and everything. So I was raised by my great grandparents and my grandparents. And so that's where I get my culture. That's where I get my identity and everything. And of course, I know stuff about our family 300, 400, 500 years ago, fully rooted and grounded and everything. And so that's what got me through. Because like I said, I went to public school and high school. That got me through. And I graduated in 11th grade. So I was trying to get out of there. I didn't want to. I took extra classes on purpose because I literally did not want to go another year with students there and everything. Some students was cool and everything. Some wasn't. Most of the people I went to school with, I haven't heard from since we went to school. that's how it was, you know.
Did you have siblings?
Yes, I'm the oldest of eight children.
Oh, really? Cool. You're the oldest of eight, and then you had eight yourself.
Yes, and then I have some stepbrothers and sisters as well.
Wow. Okay, this is a great opportunity to talk a little bit about Sephardic Ashkenazi. You mentioned, so when you mention Ashkenazi Sephardic, are you talking more European culture influence, like Caucasian? Or is that, are there Ashkenazi, I'm totally ignorant about this, or I'm not totally, but are there Sephardic Ashkenazi who are dark skinned, or most of them lighter skinned?
Well, first of all, because I was just talking about this last night, ironically, the only people who misuse the term Caucasian are people in America. Caucasian is not associated with being white. It's not even associated with being with Europe. Caucasian is a word, it's made of two words, Caucasus and Asian. And the Caucasus Mountains, most people think Caucasus Mountains in Europe. No, if you actually look at it, it actually goes all the way into Central Asia, like Iran, Afghanistan, that thing. And it has an end somewhere in like Eastern Europe. So Caucasian refers to anybody whose origins come from Asiatic origin that also was around the Caucasus Mountains. That includes Ethiopian Jews, that includes Arabs, that includes Persians, that include Afghanistan, all of that and everything, North Africa, Northeast African Egyptians, all of those people are considered Caucasian because of our origins. It has nothing to do with being white or European whatsoever. Now getting to Ashkenazi, Ashkenazis are, about 40% of Ashkenazis are genetically related to the rest of Sephardi and Mizrahians. We're all the same. And everything, and the genetics lined up with the story of when our family split up about 1,000 years ago, and some of the rabbis and priests, political priests, went to what is known as Khazaria to help convert to Khazaria Empire, which was an Ashkenazi community. And that Ashkenazi community actually comes where the descendants of the nomadic tribes that originated in from Iran, because Ham, Shem, and Japheth, for example, they're all the same children. They're all the same race. They don't represent different races. They have the same father and the same mother. Their mother's name is Kemzara in the book of Moses and the Egyptian scriptures. So they have the same mother, same father, so they couldn't be different races and everything. Even the Talmud and all that make it plain and plain that it wasn't different races. And that and gave the emphasis that Ashkenaz was just, Japheth may have been albino, but they were still all people who were color because they defined Shem, the descendants of Shem, in Talmud as being dark and comely, which is the same term they use in the book of Solomon. And when you look up what the Hebrew word for dark and comely means, what that means is it's a complexion that's between your complexion and my complexion. I gave the example because my wife is similar to your complexion and everything. But dark and comely is your complexion and my complexion. Well, when they gave a description of Ham, they said that he was actually, his skin tone was like a raisin, which is black and everything. And when you look at Sudanese people and everything, and some Ethiopians, we have a shade between your shade and someone actually have the black skin tone and everything. But all of them were of Asiatic origin. Ham, Shem, and Japheth comes from Asia. That's where Hebrew culture comes from and everything. So Ashkenaz or Ashkenazis were associated with the Iranians, the nomadic tribes in Iran. I think it's the Pashurad, might be saying it wrong. But it was an Iranian tribe that, and they were also the descendants of Gomer that migrated and they actually created Khazaria, which would be the area of modern Ukraine, and they settled there. So those people there who were Ashkenazi were people of color that came from Iran, and it was the Pharaoh's people, the descendants of the Pharaoh's people Jews, the rabbinic Jews that went to Europe to convert them, because they felt that our culture was better. And then a lot of our people to melt the wealth amongst them and intermix with them.
Right.
But
right.
Even though their skin tone may have changed over time, the genetics didn't change. That's why when they did a DNA test on the Ashkenazi Kohanim, and they did the test on the Lemba Kohanim and other Kohanim of the Mizrahi and everything, they all came out the same. We have the same genes.
Yeah, yeah.
So our skin tone may have changed, because we have Jews all the way over in China. We have Jews. We have several tribes that in India. We also have the Taliban. The people in Afghanistan are descendants of the children of Israel, the Northern Kingdom that follow Saul.
Okay. All right.
Because over here they keep lying and talk about the lost tribes of Israel. Our tribes are never lost and everything. Just because some of our tribes practice Islam and everything does not mean that their genetics change. You can look at a lot of people who Muslims practice Islam and they have the last name Khalil, which telling you that they're from the tribe of Levi, even though that they actually practice Islam and everything.
Okay.
In Israel.
We got to take a commercial break. We take a commercial break every half hour. This is fascinating to me because I think this is a part of our culture and history that we don't get in public schools. And I want to come back and talk about how important it is to know these things, because the media twists and turns these things, and especially when we have Israel, the Israel over there now, Netanyahu and all that, people need to know what the history of that land is so that we don't get fooled anymore. So we're going to take a break. And for those of you just joined us, we are talking with Dr. Rabbi Cohen Shalamim about Middle East history and American history and how really it all blends together, because we can travel and we can intermingle with other people. And so there's just a lot to learn here tonight that we can pass on to our children so that we can stop accusing each other of being racist and all that. Because as you just heard from him, we're all mixed up. Skin color has nothing really to do with why we're not being educated. All right? So Naima Latif is in the studio, and she's going to bring us the commercials, and then we have a caller in her studio who would like to ask a question or make a comment. So thank you, Rabbi, for all that great information. Naima, your mic is open.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve a peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com. Viata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viata. Okay, we're back, and Naima, do you want to open up the mic for the guest who has a question, or the caller with a question or comment? And let me just make one comment.
Viata, how are you?
Good. Let me make one comment here. I am on my 2 Facebook pages and my YouTube channel, Viata's Tiny House Village. So if you have trouble calling in, or if you're in Facebook and you're having trouble, you can go to either my personal Facebook, Viata Robinson, or my Soul Purpose Healing Facebook or YouTube. I think this is an important discussion we're having, so I put it out on all these channels so we can get it out to as many people as we can, because we got a serious problem with the education system. So we have a caller, Dr. Rabbi, on the Female Solution platform. I believe it's the brother, who's calling? I didn't hear.
It's Pianchi.
Oh, Brother Pianchi from, I'm not sure, where are you located now?
You know, I'm down where it's warm. But I was going to make comments about the school, but you know this thing about skin color does not relate to kin. And I hear people speak that all the time. Skin color, black skin or red skin, does not relate to kin. And what causes your skin to be different is due to a mutation based on the environment that you developed, evolved in. Indians, when they first came across the Bering Strait, they was Asians. If you move from one place or migrate from one place and stay after 1,000 years, you are not the same people that you were when you left from where you left from. But on the issue on these public schools are really terrible. And if anyone can afford to pull their children out and go elsewhere, they should. We had reports of the Baltimore public schools, once again, 23 high schools. And none, zero, zilch of the students in those 23 schools are performing at math level proficiently and not meeting the standard. And I can't understand how the people of that city would even permit that to happen. But then again, I do. And you know, I hate to say this, but when looking at the data for all these periods of time, I think you have got the best that you're going to get out of what you have to work with. It's not going to get any better, not based on the methods that you're trying to achieve. It just ain't going to get no better. And when you talk about, I've heard someone, I don't know if it's on this program, is saying that the parents don't even understand the lessons. Well, that's because the parents probably came out of the same system. It's a contendum. It's like a merry-go-round. If parents don't learn, the children don't learn. And those children become parents, and their children don't learn. It just goes on and on and on, unless there's an innate ability for them not to learn, and you're getting the best that you're going to possibly get. And it's just not associated with Baltimore, and really it's not just associated with black kids. But what I'm saying is the present way that you're trying to get achievement out of these mass populations of blacks in these urban schools is not working. What's your opinion?
Well, did you have a question for our guest, or that was just your comment for Dr. Rabbi Cohen? Did you have a question for Dr. Rabbi Cohen?
No, I was just responding to the title of the show when it was talking about public schools. And I
agree with that. Okay. So, Dr. Rabbi, my thought is this. When you have parents who came out of a broken system and who are trying to educate their children or in public school, is there any way that do you think parents can assist their children to learn like these new math skills other than taking them out of public school, or are they just doomed if they stay in public school? Is there any help for parents and children who stay in public schools and who are struggling with the curriculum?
Well, that's a good exercise because I'm actually preparing to possibly run, be the mayor of the city of South Fulton.
That's Georgia. Is that outside of Atlanta?
Right, it's outside of Atlanta. Actually, it's going to be bigger than Atlanta because it's now rated the blackest city.
Really? Wow. Okay. So
yeah, Atlanta is predominantly black, but most people say no, they're not.
Okay.
But, I'm actually providing free education opportunities to parents, especially low-income parents and everything, because they need education, number one, not just for their children, to be able to have their children, but they also need education so that they can have the resources to remove their children from certain environments. Also, to be able to not be low income or come into care. In other words, they need education to become empowered. And I think that especially for providing volunteer free education, parents who are not on public assistance is an offer. But also, I think that people who are on public assistance, Section 8, food stamps, Medicaid, it should be mandatory that they get general education at least, beyond high school diploma, and go to school or pick up a trade or something like that, and give them a time frame to get that education so they can get off of welfare, because there should be a time limit. Except for people with disabilities, there should be a time limit that people be depending on public social welfare, because that plays a role in it being dependent. Being a dependent parent and being dependent on the system and not being empowered and not having a vision for your family or a plan for your children, all of that is playing a role in the whole demise of that family, that family unit that's going to filter down to the children and is going to affect them education-wise. There has to be some way to parents' basic literacy skills, basic social skills and economic skills and job skills. I'm not a Democrat. I don't like Democrats, but Bill Clinton made effort to do that back in the 90s, I remember. They have not called it the work. You have to go, you have to do so much work in order to get benefits and everything. I think you should, have to work and also take time to get education. You add that part to it, and you end up having a person no longer be in the system at some point. So I like his idea. I like a lot of things because Bill Clinton, as corrupt as he was in his personal life, that's his problem. I don't really care about what he does in his personal life. Whatever him and Hillary did, whatever fun, is not my concern because I don't pick into people's house. But what he did as a leader, I think it was beneficial. I think it could have been more effective, but then you had these liberals come in and use the race card and the liberal and the race hustle thing to dismantle black empowerment and keep black people with their hands out, want, need, but they have nothing to contribute back to society. And I think liberals did an injustice to the black community that is now descended the black community into total chaos, and hopelessness and despair to the point now where the predators are the rulers of most black communities across the United States. We see it every day. Atlanta was never a place where you'd be afraid to go out and drive on the highway because every day somebody's getting shot on the highway. Every day somebody gets shot on the highway and stuff. You never saw stuff like that and everything, and people getting murdered every day and stuff. And it's just like out of control. The murder rates now and the behavior of the inner city is worse than it was in the 80s. So while the world is progressing and evolving and getting technological, the Asians and everything are doing their thing, and Hispanics are doing their thing, and the Jewish people and the Arabs and everything, and the Africans and Caribbeans coming over here doing their thing. There's a segment they call it, like it's called ADOS, American Citizens of Slaves, and you got whatever. They're just sitting here trying to pull a race card that is not doing them any good. It is not helping them education-wise. It's not helping them in anything. Black Americans will get more funding, actually, from the government than any other ethnic group. And it's always been like that. And yet, despite the fact that they get way more funding, disproportionately, that they shouldn't be getting, in my opinion, it's not doing them any good.
Well, and still asking for reparations, too. Like even though those statistics are real, that there's more funding being given to many black communities than any other. So let me ask you about your children. We did a show not too long ago about single mothers, and we brought up the fact that Whitlock, I think his name was, he made a comment about how single mothers were part of the problem when something happens to Tyree Nichols like they did. So when you're raising your eight children, I imagine there were more than one mother with those eight children.
Okay. There's polygamy in my family. I come from a polygamy family.
So how did you, as a father of eight children, make an impact on those eight children so that they weren't raised by a single mother? What was your mindset to make sure that these eight children had the influence of a father, even though you had several wives?
Well, I'm always, most people know me, I'm the person that gives balance and foundation to anybody that comes around me. And so that's going to be an automatic for my children. I set the tone, I set the vision for the family. Like, for example, my eight-year-old son, he's a master coder at the adult level, and he's also gifted. He's only 8 years old, and he can actually probably be Elon Musk in coding. I'm not exaggerating. And I discovered that just by looking at his behavior and guessing that based on his behavior, because you have hyperactivity, ADD, and me being having a background in integrated psychiatry, I realized that the ADD is children who actually have faster brain processes than most people. That means they're technological. And so if you don't give them technological stimulation, they have to move around to get that energy off. But if you put them in a technological environment, coding and stuff, all of a sudden ADD disappears.
Now, what do you mean by coding? Explain that to us.
Coding, like being able to, like, that runs servers, run the internet, that runs all the applications and everything with technology and stuff. Coding is the driving force behind most technology and everything. If you want to get into aerodynamics or NASA, or you want to work for Tesla and all of that, you have to have a coding background. That's the standard and everything. And for an eight-year-old to actually have a coding background, we gave him a test just to see. He mastered it on the first try before he learned anything. It blew our minds. We had schools and institutes and everything was offering him. He was offering off scholarships and funding and everything because he actually scored in the top 3% in the world. So
once you started recognizing this boy had some unique energy, my grandson is just like that. So I'm really interested in this part. He's just like that. He loves video. He's only 6 years old. He plays chess already. And he said he's bored now with chess. Can you believe that? Because he's good at it. He was good at it. But grandma was beating him, and they got upset. So, yeah, these children, this generation, many of them, I believe, have some special energy, like your son. That how did you start recognizing, first of all, that this child was unique and different and energized in a way? And what did you start do to enhance that gift that he has?
Well, basically, like I said, just him being hyperactive, and he'll go and do his schoolwork, but he just move around. He got to do something and everything. Sometimes it will break his focus and everything, but he still does schoolwork very well. And so, like I said, I told my wife, I said, I think he might be a coder. I said, let's give him just a test. And we gave him a test, just out of the blue, and blew out the guy, and his ADD went away. That's what blew our minds and everything. And so now there's they have coding schools here in Atlanta, like in Douglasville, where they teach your children how to make games and robots and all of this stuff. He's already made his own first video game. He made a video game. And he did it in 3 days. I don't know how in the world. But so they have schools that actually help them evolve into that and everything. And so that's what we're gearing culturing him toward and everything while he's also in gifted class. In his gifted classes, he actually has extra mentors. He even has a therapist that actually helps him after school or before school, in addition to our support, to make sure that he stays the top of the line, because he's like literally the top of the whole Cyber Academy. He goes to Cyber Academy right now, which means that he's home, but he has teachers. He has several teachers, just like everybody else. He has private classrooms and everything, and then he has the extra help in addition to our support and everything. And we're culturing him with his Jewish identity, and he's rooted in ground and stuff like that. And then, of course, his peers, we have family and friends that are Muslims from Africa, and so he's around a very positive environment. We make sure that any children he interact with, we actually interview the parents. If the parents are not stable and the parents are not up to our standards, then the kids cannot interact with my children. Some people get mad at that. We don't care. Because our children is more important than their feelings.
Especially these days when there's so much pedophilia and all these weird things going on. You got to know the parents. That's like, I agree totally with that. And then what about all the, okay, so you got one out of eight that has demonstrated a very unique energy, special skills. What are some of the other energies you notice with your children that are not quite the same as this child?
Well, right now, my two youngest children, because my other children are adults, my four youngest children, I have two boys, two girls, and they're parallel. I have two that are the technological and two that are the creative. I have a year-old girl, Adania, who started walking at 6 months.
She's 2 years old, you said?
3 years old. Okay. She started walking at 6 months.
Okay.
She talks and thinks almost at the level of her 8-year-old brother. And so she knows how to use a laptop. She knows how to use a computer, everything. And so she is also being cultured because I call her a little Ivy League. I would never send my child to Ivy League, not in this day and age, because Ivy League is full of crazies now. I don't even know. It's like dumb geniuses. That's what I would call kids the Ivy League today. They're not like the Ivy League 20 years ago. So, but I call her the Ivy League because of the intelligence and everything. So we cater to her as well. And then I have a 5-year-old daughter who's basically just a natural model. She's into modeling. And not only that, she's athletic. Super athletic. And then I have a 3-year-old son who actually is literally a replica. They're both athletic. They're both model types. They're very creative. And so we invest into that and everything. We're working on getting an agency for both of them so that they can actually get into professional modeling and everything.
Okay. We're ready for our second break. And when we come back, I did have a caller with their hand up, but their hand's down. And maybe they'll put it up after the break. But this is fascinating because I want to ask you when we come back about the pregnancy, how involved were you in the pregnancy? Because I think you have these brilliant children and unique children because something was done right while the mother was pregnant. I'm a doula, and I strongly believe that those type of gifts start in the womb, and especially if they're healthy emotionally. The parents are doing something right while the pregnancy is going on. So we'll be right back with our guest, Rabbi Cohen. Naima Latif, your mic is open if you want to go ahead with our...
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry. You are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks, and thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day, and thanks for listening.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant? Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of ourselves, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about cell care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
To Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn it into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
Listeners saying they can hardly hear you, Rabbi. So can you speak up a little bit more? And I'm going to open up the mic. I have two callers here. So I'm going to
go. Are you able to hear me well?
That's better. I think that was better what you just said.
Okay.
Did you come closer to the mic or something?
I didn't change anything.
Okay. Well, if you can, just speak a little closer, maybe to the mic or. We'll go.
Okay.
Let's test it and see. I'm gonna open up the mic and see.
Are you able to hear me well?
I can hear you fine, but I have my phone as a speaker, because direct connect does not work too well on Blog Talk. So I use my phone. So sometimes, and StreamYard is working with Blog Talk Studio. So let me open up one of the mics, see how well he can hear you. This is Brother Kwame Sunhorse. Can you hear Rabbi Cohen?
Good evening, Sister Viate. Yes, but he sounds very distant. You know, it's like he's speaking in a room with his phone on, you know, using speaker. But, I mean,
okay.
I can understand what he's sharing. And Rabbi, and I thank him for sharing, you know, what he shared. You know.
Can you speak up a little bit, too?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Rabbi, can you hear him?
I can hear everybody.
Okay, go ahead, Kwame.
Okay, and what he was speaking about, his 8-year-old son, and I commend him because, you know, that's something that they have offering now for our children, K-12, is the STEM program, that science, technology, engineering, and math. And really, we're falling behind because it's statistically 34% compared to 58% of the Europeans and Asians that high achievers in that field. But to hear him saying this, that his son is writing codes and creating his own games, is because the educational system at one point, we were educated under the laws of Jim Code. Now we're hearing him saying that his son is writing the codes that would be able to create the games and the venues that will help our children to have a better acknowledgement of who we are and what we can achieve. And so it's important how we guide our children in their purpose and what they come in the planet for. And hearing him, and the other part I wanted to ask is that him being a rabbi and his beliefs, I know in the Judeo system, the Jewish system, they have synagogues. And in their synagogue, they have their children to come after class to the synagogue and to learn about their culture, their history, their language. And I was wondering, is that something that he has, that he's doing with his, with his title as a rabbi? Is that does he have a congregation, or do we have a organized body that is studying and forming what he is speaking on?
Did you get that?
I get it. Well, I am. I'm a Rabbi Cohen. Rabbi Cohen is different from a rabbi. Actually, higher than a rabbi. Rabbi Cohen is Aramaic chief priest. That's what that means. And I'm actually the senior priest of the diaspora Mizrahi Jewish community. Most of the Jewish people that are in the United States are Ashkenazi. There are very few Mizrahi, and then you have the Sephardi. And so the very few Mizrahi may actually gravitate toward more Sephardi synagogues, if anything. So there's very little resource for Mizrahi Jews in the United States. I'm the president of the Kushite Hebrew Yeshiva Open International University, which is actually approved by the Florida Department of Education. And we provide distant learning certificate, diplomas, and degree programs for those who are in the Mizrahi Ethiopian in Sephardi Jewish community. I'm actually developing, but I'm actually going to be pushing a course where children, as a stepping stone, in 11th and 12th grade, can start working on either a diploma or an associate in business education so that as soon as they graduate high school, they already have an associate's degree because they started the extra, taking extra courses outside of high school. That's something I'm introducing for the Jewish community, but also for other people's Black Americans are welcome. I do a lot of focus on educational development in Africa, the Middle East, and South Asia. That's my main base and where most of my followers are. Most of my followers are not in the United States. So we work to help them and everything. We have what is known as the National Hebrew Homeschooling Association, but I'm working on improving that where it actually have homeschooling curriculum for Jewish children, where the parents do distance learning, and they can actually use our education and they can customize it to add additional education that you want to add to it, but just still get standard education that'll be approved by the Board of Education and everything to be able to go from each grade to everything. So we're working on that as we speak. As far as just working in America is something that for the past 20 years, most of my work has been international. I'm affiliated with the United Nations and the World Health Organization. I used to be between 2014 and 2017, I was the actual rabbinical representative to the Muslim world for the United Nations Peace Organization on behalf of the State of Israel. So I was basically a rabbinical ambassador for the State of Israel. So most of my work has been international, not local, even though we have a home here and everything. The ideas that we have for the Jewish community, we're going to open them up for others who may want that type of education as well.
Okay.
But we have tons of resources for our children. And that's just standing with the Ashkenazi, Sephardi, or Mizrahi, because we have a Sephardi community here. They have their own schools. They own their own daycare. They have their own elementary school and all of that stuff there. And it's attached to the synagogue. We call them yeshivas as well. Yeah, so we have everything like really intact. I'm just, you know, trying to provide more ideas through our university where we can, you know, start students out, because I want to make sure that children, because number one, in Judaism, you become an adult, a young adult at 12 years old if you're a female, 13 is a male. You're required to start being responsible, and when you turn 20, you become a full adult that can start doing stuff and, you know, participating for and preparing yourself for leadership in the Jewish community. But we prepare children younger and everything. And so because of that, having an associate's degree, as soon as you come out of high school, will put you ahead of everybody by light years, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
well, we've got another caller. I'll leave your mic open, Kwame, if you want to mute it. And then let me get to this other caller. 267-249, your mic is open. Give where you're calling from, please.
Shalom, shalom. This is Prince Israel. Shalom.
Welcome. Nice
shalom,
to hear your
sis.
Voice.
And yours as well. How are you? I'm
good,
enjoying
thank
the
you.
Show.
Great. Glad you could tune in.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the show. This is my brother, Cohen. Shalom. Shalom, Cohen. How are you?
Doing good, brother. How's everything with you and family?
Everything is all right. We dealing with the school situation. We ourselves are very familiar with the hardship that our children are receiving in the public schools. And what we did in 2017 was we opened a school in our community in Georgia. It's called GHA, Goshen Hebrew Academy. And I heard all the programs that you have going on that you would like to try to get people involved in. If it is acceptable to you, maybe you can conversate with us and maybe we can get some of your ideals and incorporate some of your ideals into the school that we presently have up and running in Georgia. We do homeschooling and online and in-house teaching. So if it's possible, maybe we can run some ideals past each other. Basically, I'm interested in hearing what you have to offer, and we can incorporate some of those ideals into the school that we already have in place. You know, we felt as if it was time for us to do something as opposed to just talking. Israel, do that. We're good at that. We just talk. but we actually put up forth efforts through the Most High's blessings. Me, my sister, Hayagita, and my Isha, Princess Madaya, we all got together and we formulated a school and we put everything in motion, and it's actually happening, up and running. So if you're interested, just, you know, give me a call or some kind of way we can get contact, or I can just give you the number to the school.
Absolutely. We'll definitely talk and exchange numbers and sit down and work some things out. Absolutely.
All right. Sounds good. So, Rabba, keep up the good work, bro. Keep up the good work. May the Most High be with you.
Absolutely. Peace and blessings, brother.
And I am so blessed to meet Prince. He was introduced to me a while back, and we did two shows together. Someone informed me that he was interested in tiny houses. And for those of you who don't know, the speaker, the caller who just spoke, he has, you have over 100 acres of land, right?
Yeah, over 100. We got like 110.
110 acres of land. That's where it starts. It's like, let's get busy, people. Get some land, and then let's come together and, like these brothers are going to do, and talk about how we're going to educate our children and get them out of the system that is so broken. I love the pictures behind you. Tell us a little bit about, what is that? Is that from Israel, those pictures behind you?
Yeah, those Ethiopian Jewish children who had just arrived in Israel.
So what is happening with that group of people? I know we had, what was it, Aliyah, they called it. They were flying a lot of Ethiopians into Israel, and then we were hearing that they were exporting, sending them back. So what, do you have any current information on that situation?
Well, I know there's a documentary out, which is awesome, called Red Sea Resort, and it tells you exactly how Ethiopian Jews were rescued and what they had to go through. Amazing movie. It's called Red Sea Resort. There's a lot of things that still need improvement. Unfortunately, we have Netanyahu. I'm not a fan of Netanyahu.
Who is?
But Netanyahu, he has shown kindness to the Ethiopian Jews. I actually saw him show kindness to the African Hebrew Israelites. He actually was there when they did their ribbon cutting for their new school and everything. So,
is this recently?
No, we're talking about over time. He has been level-headed with the communities and stuff. I just don't like his foreign ideology, and I don't like how he deals with the Palestinians.
Right.
Those are the sisters.
Right.
But there's a lot of work that still needs to be done, and that's one of the reasons, that's the other reason why we have the Kushite Hebrew Yeshiva, is because I use the Kushite Hebrew Yeshiva to lobby in Israel and get influence, and to influence the people, because I'm trying to gather Mizrahi and Ethiopian Jews to become more empowered, get better education, and start becoming influential in politics, because my goal is to see regime change where we end up with a Mizrahi or Ethiopian Jewish prime minister, because I believe that the only way we'll ever have peace in the Middle East is if Mizrahi or Ethiopian Jews are in the government. Ashkenazi Jews, they're our brothers and sisters, we love them and everything. We have disagreements and everything, but we're still family. But I don't believe that they're qualified. The leaders that they have to put in power for years were not qualified. So Yitzhak Rabin was the only person I think was really qualified to be a leader of our people. And so since then, it's just been nothing but chaos and everything. And we have this president who's about to send us to Armageddon. I'm working to, with the diaspora influence and everything, working to the power of Israel and Ethiopian Jews to do more until we can break through the lines. And so far, we have alliances in the government that's proven that they can actually break up things, because they overthrew Netanyahu once, and they can overthrow Netanyahu again. you just need more. And so the Kushai Hebrew Yeshiva, that is how I've actually been able to reach a lot of people. And through the Kushai Hebrew Yeshiva, that's also how I was able to actually, getting Jews protected in Afghanistan, getting Jews who are people who want to practice Jesus in Pakistan. I don't know if you ever heard of the first Jew of Pakistan that was ever registered. It made international news. I was behind that. That's my friend. We're free. And I helped him become the first registered Jew of Pakistan. So I'm actually using our resources and everything and what we're doing to actually influence people not only in Israel but in the Middle East and everything. Just a quick example. I founded the Abrahamic Initiative, the Seed of Abraham Initiative, which was about bringing unity and peace between the Seed of Abraham, Seeds of Isaac and Seeds of Ishmael. And it was Donald Trump who took that initiative and created the Abrahamic Accords. And that initiative also played a role in, I'm a WWE wrestling fan. And the WWE started going, back in 2014, I said I was going to have world leaders sitting down watching WWE, and they're going to be resolving world issues. And I was active with the United Nations then, and all the leaders, they liked the idea because they always see me expressing about wrestling. So I had people, heads of state and prime ministers and stuff that were watching wrestling with me and stuff, on video. It was hilarious. But I told them, I said, who's going to have that? And lo and behold, WWE is able to go to Saudi Arabia every year. And, there's Jewish wrestlers that are in WWE. They can go to Saudi Arabia, see their state, might have bothered them. And now people who are from Israel can go to Saudi Arabia and everything. So they have that relation and everything. So the stuff that I was doing was making progress because one thing that I did was I started to explain to people that you can't blanket and put all Jews in one box. We're three major ethnic groups in Israel. Ashkenazi, which is 15% of our population. You have Sephardi, who are 25% of our population. The largest population of Jews in Israel and in the diaspora are the Mizrahi and the Ethiopian Jews and everything.
Okay, so that brings to mind this controversy we had recently with Kyrie Irving, where he brought out the book Hebrews to Negroes. So that started a wave of conversation. And what you're doing, Dr. Rabbi Cohen, is educating us on the differences between what we look at as Jews, and most people don't even think about Jews that look like you until Kyrie Irving and Ye started talking about this, going DEF CON on the Jews. All that brought out a major conversations about all of this. So what was your thinking about that controversy, especially the book? Have you read the book Hebrews to Negroes, or have you seen the documentary at all?
I give it a thumbs down.
Okay. So that's interesting. Because why do you give it a thumbs down, and how do you think what that whole controversy affected even the world? Because there was a lot more conversation. You saw YouTube videos galore with rabbis, mostly pale-skinned rabbis talking, and then a few Hebrew-Israelites conversation. So let me start with, why do you give that book a thumbs down, or that documentary a thumbs down?
Well, let me say this. Kyrie Irving, like any adult, should be able to do whatever he wants to do in his free speech.
Right.
I don't support what they did to him and how they treated him and handled him. That's basically what you would expect of liberals. Because liberals literally think they own black Americans, and black Americans respond like they're owned by white liberals. That's just a fact. Even in the inner city, it's just a fact, and that's why they're in the state that they're in. And so these black Americans, they say stuff, and the liberals get up and they put them in their place like they've been doing for the past 100 years. But what he posted, I don't agree with and everything, because it doesn't reflect real Hebrew history. It's pseudo history. It's pseudoscience. It makes no sense because it does not align with the Torah whatsoever. And, I know all black Hebrew Israelites are not bad people. I know some good people. and everything, but I do not, I'm not a Black Hebrew Israelite, and they're not considered part of us. What they believe in is foreign to ethnic Israelite and Eastern culture. And the stuff that they're saying makes no sense because their concept of race is flawed. Even the concept of using the Ham, Shem, and Japheth as different races is flawed. Like I was pointing out about Japheth, was the same race as Ham and Shem. They had the same mother and father and everything. I'm in genetics, so you can't, you know, I'm not going to be with ignorant stuff because genetics don't work like that where two parents create different races. It just doesn't work like that.
Let me just say, for those of you, I just had a text. If for those of you in the Female Solution Studio, if you have a comment or question, press 1. Press 1 and you'll be, your hand will be raised in the studio and Naima Latif can open your mic and or let me know that you have a question. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And so with the Hebrew, the Negro, genetics, because, I actually used to work with a company called DNA Tribes, and I'm the brains behind why they created the Middle Eastern panel, because I wanted to actually see, you know, Black Hebrew Israelites were who they said they were. Well, about 1% came out. Yeah, the rest of them that I tested, nobody came out even closely, remotely of Middle Eastern ancestry or connected to our people. I posted in the private chat, I posted a link to my genetic test, because everybody, most people originally didn't believe anything I said about myself because how, you know, they was going about how I look, my physical features, and that, no, there's nowhere in the world your family came from, all this stuff you said was fabricated, you know, is real, so that most people were like, thought I was fabricated, and then when I showed them the DNA test, I took it later just to prove it. It backed up more than what I said, you know, but, you know, most of the, first of all, the Atlantic slave trade should not be called the African slave trade, and this is why. Less than 1% of the African slaves were brought to the United States. They didn't even make up 1% of the total slave trade. It was only about 400-some thousand people. That's not how they went to fill up the city of Atlanta. The other 10 million went to mostly went to Brazil, Colombia, everything, and you had those who went to the Caribbean. Well, the genetics proved that everybody who went to Brazil and South America were transplanted not from Africa, but from the Middle East because of the Ottoman Empire. If you notice today, nobody likes Kurds. Nobody. Iraqis, Turks. The Turkish don't like Kurds, and they're Turks and everything. The Iranians, the Pakistanis, nobody likes the Kurds. The reason why is because the Kurds, even though they practice Islam, they practice this weird form of this weird ancient culture that where they worship this peacock god or whatever. And most people in Islam and traditional Judaism consider that Satanism and everything. But they mixed it with Islam, and so they were the ones who were running the Ottoman Empire and everything. And they end up enslaving Arabs and ethnic Jews, and they traded with the Portuguese, and the Portuguese are the ones who translated those people down to South America. The ones that were from West Africa are the ones who were brought here to the United States, and then, of course, the Caribbean. Trinidad is the only place because Trinidad basically turned part of Venezuela. So those who went down to Venezuela, their genetic test, because I have followers who are part of our community, the Blood and Israeli community, it's just a DNA test. They came out pure Israeli and everything. When I was talking before, if you look, have you ever seen the president of Venezuela?
No, I haven't. Who's he?
What's his name is Maduro. Go look up Maduro and then look up Saddam Hussein. They look identical, like they're twins, like they're the same person. And in a lot of respects, if you take a lot of people from South America and you put them next to somebody from the Middle East, you wouldn't know who was who unless they told you who they were. That's because genetically, they're the same. And that's why we have the largest Sephardi and Mizrahi community in the diaspora, actually, down in Brazil and everything because of descendants. So now, here in the United States, there's one particular little history about Brunswick. We had the Catholics who issued an edict to force Jews to convert to Catholicism. And so you had some Jews who did it, you had some Jews who just did it outwardly, but practiced Judaism inwardly. They called them the Moranos. Well, the Moranos that got caught practicing Judaism were arrested and rounded up and placed on the island of Fayetone, which is off the coast of Africa, and were left there. The adults died off, and the kids had to grow up and had to fend for themselves. These are ethnic Jews. So when the slaves, when the Ottomans and everything, and the Portuguese started the slave trade, they went over to Fayetone and took those people. And they took that little small population, not a lot of people. It would be, I would say, probably like 1 to 2% of the 400,000 that came to the United States. And those ethnic Jews were brought and dropped off in Savannah or Brunswick. Those are the ones who were ethnic Jews that were brought over in the slave trade to the United States. That is because, like I said, that's a small percentage. The rest of the DNA does not agree that most African Americans are descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, there are some who have what is known as sickle thalassemia. I'm pretty sure you heard of sickle cell.
Mm-hmm.
Sickle thalassemia is West African. But there are some who have sickle beta, what they call sickle beta thalassemia or sickle alpha thalassemia. For example, I have sickle beta thalassemia. I got it from my great grandparents and everything. And my genetic, the variation that I have matches everybody who lives in the mountainous region of Palestine, which is Mount Carmel. Everybody, most people in Mount Carmel carry the thalassemia trait, so I have that sickle beta thalassemia. So if they have sickle beta thalassemia, those people are of Mediterranean origin. That's a genetic trait amongst African Americans that have Mediterranean origin. They could be either Jewish, Arab, or they could be both, which is known as Mediterranean. So there are elements, both from the Fayetone descendants and the thalassemia. In fact, it could be that the thalassemia people came from the Fayetone, because other than that, there were no other Jews brought here through the slave trade. So the claim that everybody who's black or African American is Hebrew is pseudo-history and is pseudo-science. It does not align with anything. So I can't support something that's not accurate or true.
Well, we have, and what about the history of Native Americans coming here as well as Aboriginals from Australia? I've read a lot about the artifacts that were found in South America that showed we had Aboriginals from Australia migrating up South America.
That's when they tried to dance. The natives from Asia that came through and created the annihilated. They annihilated the majority. That's a fact.
Yeah, so we have, this is Black History Month, and I'm so glad that you're here to share this aspect of Middle Eastern influence here in America, which most people don't even know about. So I want to talk about health and
Could
nutrition.
Could I ask a question?
Well-being. Who has a question?
This is Kwame.
Kwame has a question, and then we
got
to go to our last break. Go ahead, Kwame.
Okay. All right, thanks. And my daughter right now is in Saudi Arabia. They just left Dubai, and then they're going to Egypt because they're visiting Mecca. And the part for me is that we're looking at its name Israel, the land of Israel. And that was like in 1947, I think they gave it that name. But in that part of that quote-unquote Middle East, because all of that was one land mass which was connected together, because all you have is West Asia and East Asia, and then you have the continent, and the part was called a Beersheba, or when they looked at it, you know, being the part of the land of Kemet. So looking at, or the land of Cain, and so it being the Holy Land, and these names that were given to, you know, the Palestinians that were there before that. But then in 47, I think that's when they brought the Jews in and named it Israel. And so there were biblical names for that land, and then the modern resettlers, because we call this island Turtle Island, and then the invaders came in and said, this is the Americas.
So what we're looking at is the renaming of specific landmass to those who come in and conquer the people and change the names. What was the real name of biblical, historical, factual name of what is today what they call Israel? What was it before they was invaded?
What was before they was what?
They were invaded.
Before they were invaded, he's saying what was the name before they were invaded.
And which time period are you talking about?
I'm talking about the early part of the B.C., and we're going back in the biblical times. Well, that's why I said Kemet and not Egypt, and the part of these different lands were renamed over by different people, by map makers, by invaders. You know, and so what we're looking at is what is the geographical, historical connotation, just like when Beata was talking about the Aborigines. South America, Australia, and the Arctic, when we had Pangaea, was all one connected landmass until the divide. Just like America was connected to West Africa, that geologically has been proven by these two lands from the Carolinas down and West Africa have the same geological makeup structures in their geology.
Okay, so what is your specific question? Which particular
the name of Israel, the name of the land Israel, that they now say that this is where the home of the Anunnakis or whatever Jewish name they want to call them. But what was that land name before?
Before it became Israel?
Right.
And then you had the capital known as Jebus. But ancient Israel included the geographical location that you see now, all the way down to Jeddah, which is in which is in Arabia, because when the land split, and you had the Northern Kingdom of Israel. The Judah was actually further south. That's why Jeddah exists there, because that was actually ancient Judah. And then the areas that you see now in Palestine, which and everything, that was actually the Northern Kingdom. It's just Christians redesigned that over time and confused the locations and everything. But before it was called Israel, before we immigrated and we took over the land, It was run by the Phoenicians, who created the land of Canaan, which is very similar exactly where the United States got their idea from. The land of Canaan actually was made up of different ethnicities, different cultures, and it was actually an ethno-state. They had different federation states. They had people as far as China that lived in Canaan and everything. You had the Hittites, who were from Europe, that lived in Canaan. So you had a whole bunch of different people from different ethnicities and races. That
lived in
Canaan, and that's exactly
where
the United States got it from,
before
it was called Israel.
Thank you. So we're going to take our last break, and when we come back, we want to talk about educating our children about health and nutrition, because I'm sure that you have a lot of knowledge and experience on that. So, Naima Latif, your mic is open if you want to play our last commercial break.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
Our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
What happens when a group of people are kidnapped from their homes, smuggled away in chains, and held captive in a foreign land where they are tortured, raped, and forced to perform hard labor by the lash of a whip and under the constant threat of death? Slavery, the African-American psychic trauma. What happened to the doctors, writers, scientists, builders, educators, and spiritual leaders from Africa's golden age? Who did they really capture and sell into slavery? Are all African-Americans suffering from psychic trauma because of a conspiracy to hide their true identities? Do you have psychic trauma? Take the test on page 22 of the book and see. Order it online today at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. And get your personally autographed copy of the book, Slavery, the African American Psychic Trauma.
And there so much joining us tonight. We know Super Bowl is in the air, so we could have been we're in competition tonight, but for those of us who could care less about what's going on in Super Bowl Sunday today, we're thankful and grateful to have Dr. Rabbi Cohen join us and talk about. And we have a few comments from Facebook. Let me read just these. Zelda, our Monday morning mindfulness host, says, Grand Rising, beautiful teachers, love, love, love the idea to practice responsibility at age 12. Yeah. That's certainly different because they are the future leaders, and let's start them early. And she says, homeschool and community schools will work wonders. Keep up the great work. And she'll be talking tomorrow on Monday Morning Mindfulness about veterans helping veterans with Victor Sarmiento. I hope that on Monday Morning Mindfulness, 7 to 9 Central Standard on YouTube, Higher Learning TV show. And also on Facebook and Higher Learning TV show, okay? All right. Thank you, Zelda, for those great comments. And Rabbi, we're talking about health in this last few minutes because they don't teach that in schools, for sure, and even at home. So how do we squeeze in the education about the human body and how to take care of it? And help create a healthier generation.
Well, my first thing is the people in America who are holistic need to be taught all over again. The concept of holistic here is a disaster, and it's actually causing more harm than it is doing, helping, because of total misconcepts of this whole thing of natural equals safe. That's not true, because if you take a veteran, you get a heart attack. That's natural. That's a Chinese medicine. There's a lot of natural poison ivy is natural, but it's not safe. So everything that is natural is not safe. And concepts of holistic fasting, because I've been in practice almost 20 years as a physician, and I always tell people, the people who have the worst health results when you go through blood tests through my practice are vegans. They always come out abnormal, sick, and everything when they're vegan and everything. So most people have good intentions. And you got to start somewhere. But there needs to be more understanding of how nutrition and everything affects children. Because, giving children sugar and processed foods and junk food all the time. It's okay to give a child a snack and everything. But you have to actually encourage children and get children to really eat fruits and vegetables, especially vegetables. Be creative with vegetables. Most of you, they act like choking and like they're dying to eat a vegetable. But if you know how to properly prepare vegetables, fruits, and everything, and you know how to make good meals and everything, they'll have those things, and it'll play a role in their, you know, their biological and mental growth and development. Now, one of the biggest problems why this is an obstacle for Black Americans, and most people who hear this are not going to like it, is that most Black Americans are genetically damaged because of their parents and their parents' parents smoking marijuana. Marijuana is extremely detrimental to your genetic structure and your health, growth, development, and your line. I'm finna go there. So, in between 1930 and 1940s, the U.S. government started studying THC to see how they can use it as a biological weapon. That's a fact. I learned that working with the U.N. and everything. The first time they tested this as a biological weapon was when the uprising happened with the hippies, because remember, the hippies started off as anti-war. They're about peace. They're about holistics. They had good intention and everything, and all of a sudden, they descended into chaos with sex and drugs, and the ones who started the HIV epidemic and everything. Well, it was the THC, the introduction of marijuana as a regular usage and everything. Because what happens with THC and marijuana is that it actually destroys your genetic structure. And then it destroys the RNA and the DNA head of the sperm. And the women, it literally destroys the genetic structure of the uterus, where it no longer is a habitat worthy of reproduction. And so when children are born genetically altered with lower IQs, behavior problems, and a genetic inferiority. And this toxicity, this damage lasts up to 500 years. So what people have done today or 30 years ago, their children are going to be born 200 or 300 years from now that's going to be affected genetically by that. And so you're going to have a perpetual generation of people. We're always going to be on the lower bottom of society. And you're going to have people who are going to always be on the top. And most of it is going to be because of the poisoning and everything. Because there used to be a time where before the mass poisoning, we had to say no to drugs. We were fighting against the CIA bringing drugs in the community. We were fighting against the corporations. And all of a sudden, we got people fighting for drugs. The opposite. Because now, it's in their DNA, it's in their genetics, because they have been altered, and so now they're predisposed to using it, which will further damage the genetic structure. And we see the results of that genetic damage in the community, because the hippies produced the drug babies of the 80s. The drug babies are parents of the millennials. You know anything about a millennial? I understand, but millennials, for the most part, that shit crazy. They're emotionally unstable, mentally unstable. They're just all over the place. They're toxic with politics and their gender confusion. They got all of these sexualities. They want to be kids. They want to be animals and everything. That is the result of genetic toxicity. You got Black American people who are just in total chaos. And this is playing a role in why parents are not learning, can't understand education. I was going to bring that up before, because I was going to get there, because the root is drugs. Marijuana, THC is extremely dangerous. The people, they try to put all this stuff on the internet about how safe it is and everything. Yeah, of course a doctor who is hooked on it is going to try to promote it and stuff like that. But one thing about marijuana is, over time, you get mercury poisoning from marijuana. Because, like, for example, arsenic, mercury, cadmium, and other impurities are naturally occurring substances in all plants and everything. That's why I would tell people, growing herbs at home is actually bad because you don't know how to separate the impurities. And you take, you use those herbs and everything, those impurities giving you, they're going to affect you, they're going to affect your kidney, and they're going to damage your kidney. Once you damage your kidney, your whole mind is going to be imbalanced. Because the seed of the soul is not in the brain. The seed of the soul is in your kidney and your liver. So if you damage those, you're never going to be balanced in everything. So THC, the marijuana, has naturally occurring toxicity or toxic substances that are not separated. Like we have, when you go into, we got the herbal stores. But most people are not aware we have herbal prescriptions. We have natural medicines that you can only get by prescription that are considered pharmaceutical level, but they're natural. The other pharmaceuticals, what they do is they take the natural medicines and they just make it synthetic. But that does not negate the fact that natural medicine exists, and you can only get it from a naturopathic physician, not a holistic practitioner. They can't prescribe it, or a doctor of integrative medicine, or a doctor of oriental medicine who's licensable and can prescribe it. Those herbal supplements go through a process. Their herbalists are the same as pharmacists. So they go through a process, and they go through a process, and they separate those impurities, and they standardize the medicinal chemicals and components in it to create medicine that actually works. But when you go into the herbal store, those are not standardized.
Do you recommend CBD products, though? Because they are different. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just sent you. Oh, I thought you were letting me speak.
No, let me have Dr. Cohen answer that, and then I'll let you answer, Kwame. What about CBD? Because you're talking a lot about marijuana and THC, but CBD is different, right?
Yeah, CBD is different. I don't see the use of it in my practice because I have other methods that absolutely work and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like using CBD for seizures and stuff like that, I have absolutely no because it works and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing that was designed to be smoked. It's not designed to be in your lungs, but marijuana as a supplement and everything, once again, marijuana still has those impurities, and you're going to end up with mercury poisoning, and that's what causes the psychosis and everything that you see. And THC also increases your chances of getting herpes. Most people who smoke weed most likely have herpes, and I can guarantee you that's a fact. Most people who smoke weed have herpes. And it over time, it destroys your immune system, and it can lead to different types of cancers. And if not, I do medical publishing, and one of my publishers, I'm going to get peer reviewed, is about the dangers of marijuana. That's going to be my next peer reviewed publishing in medical journal, which I've compiled and everything. Because I'm very knowledgeable about everything about studies around the world, not just U.S. studies. I'm talking about studies from major universities around the world who all have come to the conclusion that marijuana is the driving force behind the mental health disparities that you see going on today.
I want to ask you one more question, and I'll let Kwame talk. You mentioned vegans are some of the worst health issues. What do you recommend when you do have a vegan show up in your office and they are in poor health? What do you recommend they do? You recommend they just start eating a lot of meat, or how do you transition them from a poor vegan lifestyle to a healthier lifestyle?
I never recommend meat to anyone. I don't eat meat.
Okay, okay. Just clarifying that. So how do you help them correct that lifestyle?
We do genetic testing.
Mm-hmm.
Our genetic testing is dual. Not only does it tell you who you are, where you come from, just like ancestry and everything, but it also tells us what diseases you are predisposed to, and also we go also use blood type as well to determine what foods are beneficial to you and what foods are detrimental to you. Like, for example, a diet for a person with O blood, people with O blood are of Asian descent, is not going to be the same diet a person of B blood, people with B blood of African descent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be the same as people A blood, because A blood is people of European descent. So everybody's going to have a diet. What may be good for one may actually be detrimental to others. Just like if you took some blood, if you took O blood, took blood from a person who was B positive being to a person who's O positive, you can kill that person. Because they're not the same race, they're not the same genetics, they're completely different species of people.
Mm-hmm.
So we use genetics and we use blood typing to determine how to customize a diet and recommend nutrition to our patients.
Okay, so before you go, we're going to make sure you people have, know how to contact you. Kwame, you had another comment?
Yes, and I'm grateful that he spoke on that about marijuana, and I just sent you from the National Health on Addiction. But what you were talking about, CBD oil, because there's what's called the Harper Grace Law, and that was created there at the University of Mississippi. The University of Mississippi has been by government contract to grow, study pharmaceutically marijuana for over 50 years now. And he's correct in talking about what he's talking about as far as psychosis, and even to the part that it's been specifically known that this causes this, and this is why they've marketed it, but they also used it as a tool for incarceration and the new criminal acts that they did with it. So the part that we're having to understand is that CBD oil that was created there at the university and being used to because she was an epileptic, this young girl, and she was fighting with the courts, that was something that could help that child. And so they created a law saying that the CBD oil was able to be used at it. But the part of the marijuana, he's correct, because that has been proven to cause, you know, the psychosis that he's talking about. And we have to begin to understand that we have to look at what it is that, you know, everybody's on psychotropics or all these things. Everything ain't good for the body, you know.
Right.
And the part of it is like you said about the blood. For what I'm seeing is going back to nature, you know, because nature is the first community. And if you understand the plant relatives and you understand the balance in your relationship to the environment that you're in and eating from the environment, the earth that you're living on and the environment you're living in, if you're living in rural areas or areas that has enough land to grow something, that is most conducive to me because you're on the same frequency you're living in.
Okay. So, Dr. Rabbi, you have a comment of that, and then we want to make sure you give contact information. I had an elderly person ask me if there's any way they can connect with you other than social media, because they're not on social media. So before you go, let us know how old of you. But did you want to comment on anything Kwame just said?
What he said was, like I say, I can prescribe CBD oil. It's actually available in the pharmacies that I use. I just don't use it because, like I said, there's other things that are available that I use. And not only that, I'm also a medical inventor. And I actually have medicines that are manufactured FDA-approved facilities that have the certification. We just use it overseas in Africa for children with sickle cell, prostate, and people with prostate cancer and breast cancer. But I'm working on having them available where people can know more about them in the United States. They're available. I can prescribe them. I just haven't marketed them in the United States, but they're going to be out soon and everything. And so the stuff that we have already works. And so I don't see any need for CBD unless somebody asks for it, and I think it's absolutely necessary. I may prescribe it, but for the most part, most people usually see what we have already works.
Well, what are some of the things you're doing for your health challenges that are working?
Well, the only health challenge I have is from a fractured spine. That's it.
Oh, I thought you said something about sickle cell.
No, I have sickle thalassemia. I have that. But after I invented fetal hemothal RX, that's what I use over in the hospitals that are being used in West Africa and everything for sickle cell patients. After I took that, I became normalized. So I don't have major, like, sickle cell thalassemia, sickle cell crisis. I don't have those and everything. If I do have something, it's rare and it's mild. The only thing I deal with is, you know, and I'm recovering quite well from a spine that I fractured some years ago. And I wasn't supposed to walk. And I walk, athletic, everything, recovered quite well. So, and, of course, I'm 46 years old. I take care of myself. We make restaurant level vegetarian dishes. And I'm big on nutrition, proper nutrition and everything. And so with all of that, my life is very manageable. Sickle thalassemia is not even a major concern for me at all, like it would be others. And I'm also the supervisor physician of the Sickle Cell Foundation of the state of New York as well.
So with people who do struggle with sickle cell, can they get some help from you in that, with that diagnosis?
I have some sickle cell patients, but we're getting ready to expand it. Because I'm over the Sickle Cell Foundation of the state of Georgia, they're actually coming, we're actually getting ready to partner and create a wellness center at the Sickle Cell Foundation here, which I'm going to help direct. And I'll be working with some allopathic doctors who I've been colleagues with for some time, and start providing naturopathic nutrition. That's what we call it, but it's for primary care. But we call it naturopathic nutrition for sickle cell patients and other patients as well. That's actually going to be making here, because we have, I don't know if you're great, but they have a sickle cell unit. I don't associate with them because they're leader doctors. They want the drugs, and they don't want to introduce holistics. So the Sickle Cell Foundation don't even associate with them, which is a good thing, and I don't either. So it's like you got two different units. One is holistic and one is garbage. That's what I consider. I'm not with the garbage.
Yeah, it seems like is going on, people who have sickle cell. I've seen people who have died from it, and I have one woman, Simone is her name, Eastman. She's very active, and she's actually an MD, and she's been wearing oxygen for a long time, but she's managing her symptoms. But how do people get a hold of you? What's the best way to connect with you?
Well, if you want to contact regarding to primary care or medicine or nutrition, you can go to www.edenic-light.com. It's EDENIC-light, LIGHT.com.
Okay. And anybody, is there a phone number they can call to reach you?
Well, with that, it's, we do telehealth. We have local services here in Atlanta, but we do telehealth services. So you would have to create a patient portal to get in contact with me about your health. You have to create a patient portal, and in there it tells you how to set up appointments, how to upload your health records. It shows you the fees, all of that stuff up front and everything. And that's how you get in contact with me about health.
So through the Edenic Light website first.
Yes.
And then you said telehealth is part of that.
And you can also schedule for in-person here in Atlanta as well.
Okay. And they'll find your name there.
Correct. I own the whole program.
Yeah. So, so grateful that you could join us on this Super Bowl Sunday. This has been a super education for all of us, I'm sure. And I'll see if I have any other comments. Thank you so much. I hope you, maybe one day we can connect when I'm in Georgia. I'll look you up. And I love your background there, the children. That's what this is all about, creating a healthier generation, because we messed up big time over the last few years. So, you've been such an inspiration for all of us. So,
yes, my pleasure.
You'll have to come back, because we just touched on a few things. There's so many other areas that we could educate folks on. So hopefully you'll come back again soon.
Absolutely. I'll be on it.
All right. Well, we're going to play our farewell, our Farewell global closing. Thank you, ending. And everybody, come back tomorrow morning. Zelda's Monday Morning Mindfulness, Veterans Helping Veterans. And we'll see you on Friday.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Xiexie. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, gracias. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, medasi. Nigeria, eshe. South Africa, ngiyabonga. Senegal, geret. Kenya, asante. Israel, toda. Pakistan, shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.